start.
All right. Everybody, if you'd be so kind as to turn to Proverbs chapter 3. We live in the age of how-to books, okay? How-to, all right? How to do this, how to do that. Proverbs chapter 3. Yep. We're going to look at a couple of how-tos. Oh my goodness, isn't that rough? All right, Proverbs chapter 3. My son, forget not my law, but let thine heart keep my commandments. Why? Let's look at verse 2. For length of days and long life and peace shall they add to thee. Okay? Now, is there anybody here who wouldn't like... Now, by the way, what's the difference between length of days and long life? Okay, I had to puzzle over that a little bit.
Life is longer.
Life is, that's good. We like that, all right? I'm going to expound on it a little bit, but I asked. Okay. I don't know how many of you have ever had a day that you really enjoyed. You look back to that day, it was just everything you ever wanted it to be, okay? And length of days, you know, June 21st, longest day of the year. And there's nothing like, you know, when it's a sunshiny, a good day, you can have all day to do whatever you want. That sun's up 5 o'clock in the morning, and you're out there at 9 o'clock at night, you can still read a newspaper there or whatever else. It's a nice thing to have long days, okay? Length of days. And, you know, there's nothing worse than just, you know, your family come to visit, a good thing's going on, and the time just flies by, it's gone, it's over. Right. What happened there? But then a long life. Brother McVeigh just went and preached his grandfather's funeral, and he just talked about sitting and talking with his grandmother, who he hasn't seen in years and years, 96 years old, so just as sharp as a tack. Every bit of her mental facility is right there, 96 years old, okay? And, you know, what a blessing. He just said how his grandparents always lived a godly life. You know, just always lived... as to Jesus Christ, and there was that answer, that long life that they had, and then peace. You know, one of the sad things about young people today is they don't have peace.
That's right.
They don't have it. What a terrible thing. Days that should be able to look back on and rejoice in and such, and there's just no peace. And let me tell you something. You're doing something wrong if you don't have peace. Now, I'm not talking about idyllic, drug-induced happiness every day where, you know, the Mad Magazine, What Me Worry, you know, thing. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a life where unnecessary stress, unnecessary pressures aren't eating you alive. You know, one of the rules that every adult can say here is this. Childhood indiscretion and youthful indiscretion leads to adult scars.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Good.
Things that we do young hurt us when we're old.
Yes.
They just seem to never go away. I remember years ago, back in the 70s, I was reading a book about Iraq. And it was talking about the culture of Iraq and this Arab culture it had. And it told a story, in order for to understand this culture, of a man who had been in the king's court. And in the king's court, he'd had an unfortunate moment where with flatulence out loud. And in the Arab world, that's the worst insult you could possibly do, and he did it in the king's court. And it was so terrible that even though he was from a rich and influential family, eventually he just moved to Egypt. There was no living down that he had done that. It was over, it's done. And he spent his entire life in Egypt as a very old man. He wanted to go back to Iraq and just see it one last time. And he came back, and 60, 70 years have passed. And he comes back and he gets off, and the little boy helping him with his baggage, he said, "Well, young man, who are you, and how old are you, and who's your family? And he said, I'm so-and-so, and my father is so-so. My father was born in the year that so-and-so had flatulence in court. And you know what? He didn't even bother. He just got back on the boat and went to Egypt. It was over. It's done. Okay? That would never be forgotten. And the sad part is we have some youth in this church who are going to commit things and do things that when they're old, it still won't be forgotten that they did that. Okay? It's still there. Now, let's say you've already done that stuff. Okay? Well, there's ways to live so that you can live with that. And you can look at people again and say, yes, I am the one that had flatulence in the court. But you know what? I have learned by the grace of God how to live. And I have learned to live with the shame of what I did. And I have a great Savior named Jesus Christ who died for me and has cleansed me. And I can do that. Okay. But Solomon's offering here length of days, a long life, and peace. Peace. What a wonderful thing. How? Don't forget my law. Let your hearts keep my commandments. Don't forget my law. The definition of iniquity in the Bible is to live without law. Okay? That's why there's iniquities and there's sins. They're two different things. The definition of iniquity is to live without law. If you go ahead and you forget the commandments God's given you, if you don't remember what they are, that's iniquity. It's not that you don't know them. It's not that you didn't stand up here at one time in Sunday school and recite certain things. But you go out there, and sometimes purposely, and other times you're just so long without it, you don't even remember them. They're not even there. You go to do something and you just don't even remember that thing you were taught. Okay? Don't be that way. Solomon says, remember these commandments. You know what? If you decide to sin, quote the commandment you're sinning against. Say it to yourself. And then if you still want to do it, just tell the Lord, I still want to do it. At least be honest about it. Be manly about it, okay? I still am going to do this thing. Do you realize that's why God actually commended Adam in that? Paul does that in 1 Timothy 2. He says Adam was in the transgression, but he did it knowingly, and that's why God put him in charge. Isn't that odd? The problem with Eve is she got all mixed up. And God said, I don't want a person like that in charge. I'd rather have somebody who makes willful bad decisions than somebody who gets all mixed up. Okay? Now, let's go on a little bit more. Verse 3, let not mercy and truth forsake thee. Bind them about thy neck, write them upon the table of thine heart. What would happen to me if I did that, Solomon? So shall thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and man. Is there anybody here who doesn't care what other people think about us? I've heard people say it. I've never seen anybody I really believed it of. Well, I don't care what they think about me. Wouldn't it be wonderful if everywhere you went, people thought well of you? That people really had a good opinion of you? And if you weren't somewhere and people were talking about you, they had praise to say and good things to say about you. And Solomon's telling you how to have that. How? Let not mercy and truth forsake you. You know, the problem with little lies to get away with something is A, the worst thing that can ever happen is getting away with it. It's the worst thing that can ever happen. Some of you children know that you've gotten away with lies at times, and it hurt you to get away with those lies. It hurt you to get away with them. Why? Because now it's become a tool in your arsenal. It's something that you have now. And it's there, and it hurts you. But the other thing with little lies is they become entangling. Okay, it's difficult. Abraham Lincoln based his legal career on the thought that no man has a good enough memory to be a good liar. So he would ask a man a question from many different angles. There was one court case where he was asking a man, well, how did you see her out by the barn? And the man said, well, it was easy. The moon was full. Okay? Lincoln knew that he hadn't seen that woman out by the barn. He knew that. He'd asked him 3 or 4 times in different ways during the trial, and he knew there were inconsistencies, so he finally got the guy to say it, and then he showed the jury that there was no full moon then. Okay, that man's lying. How did he know the man was lying? Because he asked him a few different ways, and no man has a good enough memory to be a good liar. Okay? And the sad part is, some of you live with liars. You live with them. And part of the grief of your life is you have to endure that. They're liars. And some of you are those liars. And it's not that you've gotten away with it. You're just like somebody with bad body odor that people have learned to put up with. They don't want to be around you, but they have to, okay? You're like somebody who sprays when they talk, you know, and eats and such. And you know, I know people who have a hard time with that, but they've learned. You know, I have a hard time. I spray when I talk. And they've learned to kind of stand back and shield people and such. And some people don't know, rah, all over the face or whatever else and such. And you know what? It's unpleasant to be around. But once in a while, people have to. So if you're one of those people who've learned to sow and weave lies, you're not a pleasant person to the people you're around. They just endure you. Okay? They just endure you. And they don't trust you. There's just times they just shrug their shoulders and say, oh, what's the difference? Okay? And just go ahead. But you've been told also not to forsake mercy. You know what that means? First of all, don't be cruel. You know one of the problems with somebody who's been picked on and teased a lot? It actually makes them cruel. You'd like to think that, oh, I was picked on a lot when I was a child. I'll never do that to somebody else. And yet they don't. They become cruel. They say awful things to other people. Yes. Terrible things. Yeah. That's right. Terrible things. I've watched a big improvement in you in that, Randy. And I'm glad you said guilty. But I've seen a huge improvement in you. Okay? The point is this. Your tongue should be for healing. The people you love should know your tongue is a healing thing. It's one of the reasons I don't like parents hitting their kids with their hands. I don't like that. You know why? That hand should be a thing of love and comfort. That's what it should be. Now, I spank my kids. It's always been with a rod that was measured before I was ever angry. Okay? In fact, when I'm angry, I didn't want to spank my kids because I'm angry. I'm a fool when I'm angry. Okay? I don't think right when I'm angry. There's nothing my kids dreaded more than watching me walk out absolutely composed. Fully in charge of myself. Having full knowledge of the transgression and knowing that they had full knowledge of the transgression. Okay? And they dreaded that. But this idea of just walking up and cuffing your kid, I hate that. I mean, I hate it perfectly. Those hands should be seen as a thing of love, of comfort, and your tongue should be the same thing. If your tongue has a negative thing to say about your child, about your friends, about your family, then that needs to be done in a time of soberness, in a time where they know you love them, in a time where you really can help them with your tongue, not just criticize, okay? Where you really can help them by what you said. I went through a time of tension with my wife some while back. Not terrible tension, but I just noticed a tension when we were together. And one of the things I noticed is there were certain things she was doing that I wasn't really in favor of. And I was making little hints I wasn't in favor of it. You know what the Lord showed me? Shut up. You know what I resolved? If I need to sit and talk with her, I'm going to ask her to come over to this office here like a pastor. And I'm going to sit down with her and I'm going to talk to her here in a guided way, and until I do that, I'm not going to make little hints that I don't like it. I'm not going to drop little, things and such, and I'm not going to do that. And you know what? All the tension just disappeared. It was just all gone, okay? You know why? Because there's no point walking around hinting to someone that you might not like what they're talking about, not like what they're doing and such. Endure it, and when you can't endure it, find a civil way to handle it. A civil way. That's what charity is all about, handling it that way. That's called mercy also. Okay? You know, shake hands with a carpenter sometime, and then shake hands with a man that just types in an office. You know what you find? Their hands are completely different. Shake hands with a farmer who's got shovels in his hand all day, and then shake hands with a man that's maybe a doorman in a hotel. Their hands are completely different. You know why? Because the hands of that other man, they've got calluses all over. You know how they got calluses all over? Because God developed a way in his hands to protect them. That when the pain and the blisters started coming, God saw to it that extra skin and calluses would grow there so he wouldn't feel that pain anymore. You know what happens when your tongue just keeps criticizing a kid? He grows calluses. And after a while, nothing can touch him anymore. And you've turned him into a monster. You've turned him into something you never wanted him to be. And he can't even feel criticism anymore because you just walk up and you criticize and you criticize and you criticize and you criticize and you criticize. And you know what? A callus is built. Okay? And then when you really need to go and tell them something, they can't feel it, they can't hear it, they can't hear it. You know what the Bible says? Mercy. Mercy. Mercy rejoices against truth. Let me tell you how important mercy is. When King David pulled his stunt and committed two sins, he had Uriah the Hittite murdered, and he committed adultery with a man's wife. Nathan the prophet comes up and tells him a fairly innocuous story, a fairly innocent story of a man who had one little lamb and a rich man who had many. But when a traveler came, he went and stole the poor man's lamb and killed it and fed it to the rich man. Now, you know what the law said? The law said the rich man should restore fourfold to him. That was the law. But God trusted David to judge things right. You know what David did? He said, the man shall restore fourfold. But he shall also die for this because he had no mercy. Why Jesus Christ said, mercy is the way you part of the law. Okay? Mercy is. And David judged it properly. That's a man, he didn't want a man like that living in his kingdom. He didn't want a man like that alive and on the streets and raising kids and doing stuff. He didn't want that. Okay? Mercy is a pretty important thing. Verse 3 again, let not mercy and truth forsake thee, bind them about thy neck. Write them upon the table of thine heart. So shall thou find favor and good understanding in the sight of God and men. I think back to a story William Randall used to tell me about a kid that he was in Christian school with and went to the church he was at. Him and his brothers beat up that kid all the time. They didn't like him. Thought he was a wimp and everything else. And he said the kid really did have some trouble with him, kind of a tattletale wimp and that. Then William talked about 5 years later, hadn't seen that kid in a long time. William was working at a Hess gas station, a bad part of town, Columbia, South Carolina, and he's thinking in the office. You know, have you ever go to those gas stations, those guys had that big wad of bills and they're standing there paying that? He fainted in the office with that big wad of bills in his hand. And he woke up an hour and a half later, and that kid had been the first one to walk in. Realized that William had been on drugs. If he calls the cops, calls anything, he's going to go to jail. And stood there and took all the payments and everything and guarded him during that period of time. And when William woke up, got him refreshed again, took over and walked out without saying anything. And he said nothing ever crushed him more than that kid. The one they teased and beat up all that time and everything else. So that was the one that came and showed him mercy beyond anything and protected him. Ever occur to you that instead of revenge, maybe you have a chance to show mercy? Instead of revenge for something somebody's done to you, that maybe you can go up and show a mercy to someone? Said if you do, you'll have good understanding. And both God and men will think well of you. Boy, is there anybody here who doesn't want that? Is anybody here who doesn't want God and men thinking well of them? And then he said this, verse 5, trust in the Lord with all thine heart, and lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct thy paths. You know, there's a rule of thumb about knowledge and opinions. The less someone knows, usually the more opinionated they are. And I don't mean that in an insult. It's just usually the way it is. You get somebody who doesn't know much, they form these opinions, and they don't know enough, and yet they form these opinions, okay? Or they just think they know everything. You know what the Bible says? Lean not to your own understanding. When you get into something, you know, you'll hear people say, well, you know, I've learned a long time ago when a man says that. And you know what? A lot of times those truisms are fine. I've talked about this before. When you have a puppy, it's fun to get that puppy to cock his head. You know, you do something a little odd, cocks his head. It's one of the cutest things puppies do. You know, a young dog, cock its head. See something like, try to get an old dog to cock its head.
Yeah.
Okay? You know what? It's already figured out every goofy thing you do. All right? You ain't going to get it to cock its head anymore. All right? You know why it's cocking its head? It's trying to figure out something that's bizarre. Something that doesn't fit the pattern. And such, you try to get an old dog to cock its head, you just can't do it. My kids will tell you, I've tried. I'm very shameful. They can tell you dumb stories about it. I tried to do it. An old dog to cock its head. You just can't do it. All right? And there's a lot of people like that who just made up their mind on things very young and they're never going to rethink anything. They made up their minds when they were young and they're just never going to rethink anything again. Boy, those ideas, that's all there is, just in my head. And you know, the Bible says, lean not to your own understanding. Don't do that. Always be open that there might be more to this. Okay? There might be more out there maybe that I could get on this thing. Trust in the Lord with all thine heart. Lean not unto thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him. In all your ways. How you bank. How you court. How you make friends. How you go to church. How you go to school. How you work. Any of that. Acknowledge him in all your ways. You know what it says? And he shall direct thy paths. Wouldn't it be nice to have a GPS for life? Instead of a GPS, you know, one of the things with GPSs now, I remember Hannah calling me somewhere in the middle of Pennsylvania, her GPS didn't work, and she had no idea how to read a map. She could have no more told you that where she was with a map than she could have flown a 747 to Iraq, all right? It just it completely confounded. And I actually had to tell her, all right, Hannah, put your back against that store, point this way, that's the road you want to go that way, you know, and such. She didn't have a clue what any of that meant without a GPS, all right? And it's the generation we're in. I mean, every once in a while, you'll hear a story. Tanya told a funny story. You know, the GPS said, go forward. She did. The red was like, the light was red. It said, go forward. And, you know, it's a funny story. You know, we all have stories like that. And every once in a while, you'll hear a story. I remember seeing one in England where some guy drove his car off a cliff. GPS thought the road still went that way. But you know, those things go on. But, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have a GPS in your soul that told you what the paths of your life should be? And it was from God. And then when you came up to forks in the road, you came up to difficult things, it was telling you which way to go. Bible's telling you how to have that. It's saying it'll happen. Okay? How do you do that? Acknowledge him in all everything you're doing. Okay? Don't lean to your own understanding. Okay? Trust him. And then he says this, verse 7, be not wise in thine own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. You know one of the things, and I've told you, I walk up and down these pews, and I pray for everybody that sits in these pews, and I pray for you, and people visit once or twice. I usually pray for them for at least a month after that and such. And then I go around, my family stands around the outside of these walls, and I pray for them, and I go through each one, and when I stand in front of my kids, you know what I pray? Lord, teach them to fear you. Teach them to fear you. Okay? And teach them to resist peer pressure. Teach them to do that. Resist peer pressure. Teach them to do that. Every night I beg God to do that. Teach them that. Show them how to do that. And again, what is the fear of the Lord? And some of you heard these illustrations over and over again. And some of you haven't. And you know my rule. If I have a joke or an illustration, and I suspect there's one person there who hasn't heard it before, I'll get excited. All right? But think of a chainsaw. You know, the church has one now, and we use it over there. And you know what? Jim and the other elders, they weren't real comfortable about fellas just picking up that chainsaw and using it until they taught them how to do it. Because I've been around machinery for a long time. And you know what I've learned? No one ever hurts themselves on a machine they're afraid of.
That's right.
You're afraid of that lawnmower, you won't hurt yourself with it. That 16-year-old kid afraid of that car, he won't hurt himself with it. Okay? But you wait until he's successfully driven for 6 months and he's got it all together now. He'll hurt himself. He'll hurt other people. Boy, I used to run, you know, punch presses and rolling mills and all that kind of stuff. And I'd get people on those and they'd be going and they'd get good at it. And then there'd invariably be that time I'll walk in there and there's some guy's crushed his hand in that rolling mill because he lost his fear. Okay? Lost his fear of that thing. And started doing stupid stuff. Didn't shut things off before he went to adjust it. You know, did and you know, thought that he could get away with doing that or whatever else. You want to know something? When you fear a machine, you can make good money off it. That machine will serve you. That chainsaw, you know, when I was in Vermont pastoring, the big thing there was these logging crews would go out there and they had a pecking order. A guy that would get the contracts, he'd get X percentage of the money for the logs. A guy that had the truck, he'd get X percentage of the money they got. They might be doing pulpwood and not get much. They might get into a good stand and there's more money. But it was all broken down in percentage. And I had a fellow in my church, old Roger Lyon, and he'd get, you know, his wife would be unfaithful to him. He'd get drunk and he'd pawn his chainsaw. And we'd have to wait till old Roger, you know, went through whatever cycle he was in, and then we'd go down and get his chainsaw back for him. But you know what? With that chainsaw, Roger could make a living. Roger could fell a tree. I mean, Roger could look at a tree and he could tell you exactly where it's going to drop. You have a crowded yard and you're worried about it, you wanted Roger Lyon to drop that tree, okay? He knew exactly how to put it and exactly where it went. And you want to know something? He loved that chainsaw and he made a good living off it and never hurt himself. Never. And then you get another guy walk up there. Oh, these chainsaws, they're fun, or whatever else. Northern Vermont Regional Hospital. Daniel was born in that hospital. Northern Vermont Regional Hospital is the worldwide renowned for chainsaw injuries. I was there one time and they got a phone call from Saudi Arabia. The doctors were talking to Saudi Arabian doctors how to handle a chainsaw. Because a chainsaw, when it cuts, it's ugly. All right? It does ugly stuff. Northern Vermont Regional Hospital, world renowned for chainsaw injuries. And you know what? It's men that lost their fear of that chainsaw. It's men that finally quit doing the little safety things that they were taught to do and just got in a hurry, just, you know, doing things a little bit quick or whatever else. And next thing you know, they got some horrid injury. But you know, people do the same with God.
Yes, sir.
Okay?
Yes, sir.
As long as you fear God, you're afraid of what He's going to do. You're afraid of how He's going to judge you. You're afraid of what He'll do to your life. You're afraid of what He'll do to your loved ones. You're afraid of what how He's going to judge you and the comeuppance you're going to get. As long as you're afraid of Him, you know something? He'll do you well. And you'll love Him. You'll get along with Him. He'll bless your life. If you lose your fear of Him, you're better off losing your fear of a chainsaw.
Yeah.
All right? Be better off. I just read an awful tragic story out of Tampa, Florida. Some kid, 18 years old, excellent student, good family. His parents bought him a brand new Mustang. Okay. Some woman taking her kid across the street. He drove her 50 feet down the road, him and a friend of his drag racing. Okay. Lost their fear. Lost their fear of that car, what it can do. Now she's dead, but his life's just ruined forever. Forever.
She's gone.
I remember an accident in 1966. My sister's graduating class. Remember Phyllis Jones, her son was one of those in it, and died in it. Dennis Sly died. A girl by the name of Marsh died in it. Just terrible. On McKinstry Road, between the Giants and Delvin, just an awful thing. But that fellow that drove, the one that was drunk, and they were all drunk. None of them had an excuse to get in that car, but his life's ruined. He lived. It ruined his life. He'll never live a day that he doesn't remember that those three died. And I met that, I didn't even know the Jones boys' parents. I knew their aunt and uncle they lived across the street from. I never met them until I met them over at the boat tents here. But you want to know something? 50 years later, the pain was still there from the death of that boy. But that guy driving the car, he never got over that. He said, for his entire life that I drove that car, I was there. Why? Because he lost the fear of it. He lost the fear of what that car could do. Let me tell you something. Don't lose the fear of God. God's wonderful. He's done so much for my life. But let me tell you something. The same God that's given me life and given me a family and given me a church and given me gifts and such is the same God that can destroy it all. And me, in 3 weeks from now, I could be sitting weeping because it's all gone. Weeping because of it. Because I didn't fear him. You know the Bible says fear him.
Yes.
What do you get out of it? It says verse 8. It shall be health to thy navel and marrow to thy bones. Is there anybody here that doesn't want good physical health? You know, we have some people. I was telling Brother... Well, let me put it this way. Talking about Jane and my wife each having surgery, my wife had her gallbladder out 20 years younger than when Miss Jane did it. And you know what? 20 years younger, it hurt my wife. It laid her up. It took a long time to recover. Ask Miss Jane what it's like 20 years later to have your gallbladder out. You know what? Health is a wonderful thing to keep. And when you lose your health, it hurts so bad. And sometimes young people lose their health, okay? Wouldn't it be wonderful to have good health? But your marrow, your navel right in the very center of you, you know what the Lord says? Do these things. That doesn't mean that everybody who's gotten sick has done some evil thing. Sickness happens to everybody. But I'm just telling you, God's offered this. He says, be not wise in thine own eyes. Do you realize there's nothing wiser than a 21-year-old kid that's had one or two victories? Okay? Every one of my kids has reached 21 so far, I can tell you that. Even our borrowed kid, all right? As Randy put it. All right? There's just nothing wiser. You can't touch them. They've had one or two victories in life. They have no idea what else is out there. They're like the little boy, you know, that stepped on the spider and tells mama, if a tiger came in here, mama, I'll fight him for you, you know. Boy, if a bad guy comes in here, mama, I'll get you. And then the UPS man comes to the door. Where is he? Hiding behind the homeless person. Right. Just the nature. But you know what? We're like that when we get older. We just do it on a heavier, bigger level. Don't be wise in your own eyes. Don't do that. Says in verse 9, honor the Lord with thy substance and with the first fruits of all thine increase. Okay? What is your substance? What you own? What you have? It's a tremendous book by a Christian economist by the name of George Gilder. It's called Wealth and Poverty. And he's a serious economist. He's the man who designed China's monetary policy. But you don't realize he's a arch conservative, and he's a Christian. And he mocks when President Trump and Congress and Obama and different ones would get mad at the Chinese. He set up their thing, and he said it drives them nuts. It's a conservative principle. You know what it is? The Chinese yuan is always predicated on the American dollar. It never shifts. The American dollar changes, the yuan goes right with it. And he says, as a result, every single Chinese banker knows every single day exactly what his money's worth. Never doubts. Every American banker has to call every morning to find out what his money's worth. And he says, it's a huge drain on their resources with money constantly changing. He fought the change when Richard Nixon took us off the gold standard. He fought that and said, that's a huge mistake. In his book, Wealth and Poverty, another one, The Scandal of Money, he shows how bad that hurt us to do that. $1 billion per second filters through banks constantly around the world trying to adjust because our money always changes value. And the banks take a little bit of that, $1 billion a second, as it goes off. And that's what's rusting Main Street. That's what's rusting Sears and Roebuck. That's what's rusting Kmart. So it's rusting is that money not being in the economy. And he stopped the Chinese from doing that. He said, don't you ever do that. And they flourished as a result of it. But George Gilder, in his book on Wealth and Poverty, he wants you to understand what wealth is. Your money isn't your wealth. That's how you measure your wealth. Okay? Say, well, how big's your house? Here's my ruler. No, that's how you measure your house. Okay? What is your wealth? For one thing, your skills. Okay? Take Brother Cook. He works in the telephone and communication industry and that. If something right now destroyed took every dime he had, took his homes and everything else, he still has that ability to go out there and work again. That's part of his wealth. It's part of what he has, that knowledge that he has. What else is your wealth? The home that you have, the things you accumulate, your car. And Gilder talks about people, kings of old, who might have had millions of dollars of jewels and gold down in their basement, but ate haunches of bear meat wrapped in furs to be warm. And you have some poor person in America with an electric blanket and such. Tim was talking about a thing he read, talking about how Louis XIV, whenever he went to eat, he always had 40 different things he could eat. Okay? And this economist, Tim was reading behind, said the American poor have that. They can drive down the street over 40 different things.
Yes, sir.
Okay. In other words, we've achieved a wealth in this country that kings of old. We don't always understand what wealth is. We don't always understand what we have, okay? But you know what? Solomon said this, honor the Lord with thy substance. Whatever your wealth is, whatever it is that you have, if it's just your abilities at this point, honor the Lord with them, okay? If it's what you have in the sense of goods and houses and things, that honor the Lord with those things, okay? And then with the first fruits of thine increase, that's where you're making more money, okay? You honor the Lord with the first fruits of that. You get him involved in that. Verse 10, why? So shall thy barns be filled with plenty, and thy presses shall burst out with new wine. Just some advice from Solomon, how you can live. Pastor Hayne?